o'clock.
later than that. We're going to have to stay a little bit later tonight. Because,
Started late.
Sorry. Unless somebody can talk fast.
I'm in the red room.
Okay. Our first important action is roll call. So, Secretary, I'll do roll call.
Kit.
Yeah.
Malcolm.
Yes.
Robin. She's not here. Bill.
Here.
Jim.
Yep.
Margaret.
Here.
Harold.
Yep.
Gordy. Not here. Jack.
Here.
Grace.
Here.
Okie dokie.
Okay, so we have a quorum. Mm-hmm. Our next item on the agenda is the consent calendar. And it's the April 11th, 2011 monthly meeting minutes. These are finally done. This is the important minutes because by approving these and getting these done, you can sign a letter and I will hand deliver that tomorrow to the Board of County Commissioners. So we can complete the whole package that we've been waiting for. And so this time, anyone have any corrections or additions to the minutes on April 11th, 2011? If not,
only what I might have said in the end already, I don't remember anymore.
You don't?
It's age.
Okay, I'll accept your motion then for approval of the minutes. There's
motion to approve the minutes.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Okay. Bill Sutton.
Okay.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Motion carries. So what we'll do is I'll sign the document tonight, the letter, which will attach these minutes, which then becomes part of that presentation. I will take it into the board tomorrow morning and give it to them as a start the process. There's no agenda item on it, but I do want to get it to them so they can then start taking some kind of action or movement on this. So, and that's all of our actions up to that point in time. Agenda item 4 and 5, I'm going to continue, but David has a handout on the pre-app. He's updated the last one that he sent out at the last meeting, and it's been an updated one. So have you passed it out?
Yes.
Okay, so what I'd like to do is just, we don't need to get into discussion tonight, but if we can put it off till the next meeting, give you a chance to read through it and see if there's some action, unless you've had a chance to review the last one and you had some comments, we're prepared to make some comments tonight on it. Remember, we have to stay here till 8:01. Okay, next item, we'll have to continue because Gordon is not here. And he was going to talk about the erosion control and have Toby Hyman here. And so I don't know, I haven't heard from him, and I don't know if anybody else has heard from him. I think this would be
back a notch, and if
he
comes in later,
we'll just hold off taking anything at this point in time. Okay.
Do you need a motion?
No. We'll just do it. Not unless you feel like making a motion. Next item then is number 7. This is the subcommittee on the 3516 with Grace. I think Grace was on it, Jack, Malcolm, Bill, and Peggy. And we've seen some emails, and I really appreciate the work on that, Jack. You've done a tremendous job, and I know the committee's done some good job of evaluating and providing input to changes. So let's go to you folks on your comments and thoughts. Did everybody get a copy of it?
There's a map on the wall.
The zoning map of Woodlot and
the
farm.
Yeah. Well, my intent here on the report that we have provided to everybody, I want to note that on one issue we did not agree, and so that the report that we presented actually incorporates alternatives in our recommendations. And would leave the whole issue, if you will, to the committee to decide which of the recommended alternatives is preferable, if any. The basic problem that's outlined in the situation is under the account development plan, the designation Woodlot Resource and Farm Resource both fall within the rubric of forest and agricultural lands. That means any attempt to modify them has to comply with the rigorous standards set up for genuine high-value forest and high-value farmland. Okay? The farmland that we have discovered is that in the circumstance, in the historic fact in Justin County, a lot of land was incorporated into these two categories, woodlot resource, farm resource, which are lacking in real industrial commercial value. And a lot of that was done intentionally under the operation of the compliance order that the county was under, and the threat of financial sanctions. So that the bottom line really fell out that the county had to come up with a specified quota of acreage in these categories, which, okay, we did. But what that means is that we have a lot, and actually an undetermined amount of acreage that is partially misclassified and erroneously classified. I get into, in the report, we talk about how many thousands of acres are involved, and the significance. Michael Snyder, back in 1999, indicated that between 54% of the parcels themselves, actually recorded parcels, have been established to have an internal rate of return of less than 3.50. That's three-quarters of these things. The internal rate of return, according to our land development code, defines forest soils as having an IRR of 3. Even on the standards of the IRR, we're talking about lands that are erroneously designated as settlement. We question the actual value of a transitional land, which these resource things appear to be, basically there's the theoretic value of keeping human activity remote from genuine forest because of the fire hazard associated with human activity. The experience, and I just have to look across the fence to my neighbor's parcel, where there is no management at all for a period of time. You begin to develop ladder fuels, and you have not created a fire break. You've done the opposite. You've created a conduit. So that if I should happen to start a fire and it gets beyond my barbed wire fence, it's gone. So, we call it a problem because Justin County is not blessed with a great deal of private ownership real estate. We've only got 30% of our land mass devoted to private utilization, and it would behoove our county economically to exploit every piece to its best advantage. We feel that there's an opportunity confronting us under either House Bill 2229, which is currently the law, and the proposed House Bill 3615, which may or may not become the law, depending on how much gets passed before the legislature adjourns. But Justin County definitely has the opportunity to join in a memorandum of understanding with Jackson County and Douglas County for the purpose of establishing a region. And the advantage of having a region is that the bill would give the counties, pursuant to this memorandum, the capacity to redefine their high-value forest and agricultural lands. They can change the definitions. And to a manner that more accurately reflects real conditions on the ground. If you will, Salem is recognizing that there might be a problem here. So our proposal that we would recommend to the Board of Commissioners is that they take advantage of the opportunity presented under the law to redefine forest and agricultural high-value lands to exclude these marginal quality lands located in what would otherwise be rural residential zones in the respective interfaces. Recommendation three, with regard to the majority of the smaller parcels, homesite development standards and use restrictions based on woodlot resource or farm resource should be modified. This means that lot of record, large tract, and template test currently applicable might or might not be applicable based upon the real situation on the ground. Specifically, home sites should be permitted regardless of the current existing parcel size. Two is the one that we had some disagreement on. Alternative A. With the regard to the relatively few larger parcels in the designations, for subdivision purposes, it would seem desirable to reduce the minimum size parcel to 20 acres rather than the current 80-acre minimum that's mandated. So that's changing the minimum from 80 acres to 20 acres to a large parcel. Already existing smaller parcels we've got addressed in three. The second alternative, alternative B, with regard to this minimum 80-acre thing, lot sizes should be reduced to allow further economic benefit to sizes of 5 acres, 10 acres, or 20 acres based upon the suitability of the land to support the increased density. Subcommittee definitely recommends 1 and 3 for the reasons elaborated. And as far as all the second recommendations, A and B, dealing with minimum lot size, was popped out. They said, you guys figure it out.
I have this.
Wait, before you start. Yeah. Are you done with your...
Yeah, that's my presentation.
Now, Malcolm, you had, I know in the email exchange, you had some issues. Do you want to talk about those at this point in time?
Sure.
And then what I'd like to do is let each of the members make whatever comment they'd like, and then Bob, then we'll open it up. Were you on the committee?
Yes.
Okay, Malcolm.
What's your question first? He spoke first, but I'm fine.
Okay.
Okay, I agree for the most part with everything, all of our conclusions. When we started this whole process, we talked about lowering the minimum lot size from 80 to 20, and that's what my expectations were for the entire time we went through this until the last meeting, and then this 5 or 10 or 20 came up, and I had enough time to address that, but in general, I'm against it because it just basically that opens up the door to make all the forest land that's currently zoned woodlot resources come down to commercial residential size, 5 acres. And I think that these land have 3.5. If they don't have 3.50 IRR, they can be taken out of the classification now. But to take them out just in a blanket way like this and have the potential to lower them down to 5 or 10 acres, I think it's too small. And 20 acres, I have a 20-acre woodlot. I manage it for forestry. I'm not getting rich off it, but, you know, it provides wildlife and watershed and certain amount of trees every year. And so I just think that part's just too small. That's it in a nutshell.
Okay.
And it's kind of arbitrary because I can't say that somebody can't manage 5 acres for forestry, but it seems like a stretch to do so.
Bob, go ahead and then Peggy, and then Grace.
One thing on item 3, I don't know how it got dropped, is one of the things that I suggested in there under lot of record, large lot template, and also put income. Because the farm resource has the income test as the exclusive farm test. So I recommend that we put income in that listing.
Along with template?
Yes.
The template
Income's for farm.
Yeah. One is for farms and one is income's for farms.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, income's for farm.
I'd say the test for forestry and income test for farm resource.
Hopefully we'll split those out. So
yeah. Just make sure. Now, as far as the alternatives, I proposed the alternative D. And part of it was Josephine County, when it was originally zoned in 73, had some farm and some forest zones at that point. Minimum size at that time for forestry was 10 acres. When the change came with the comp plan, we had a range of sizes, and even in the woodlot, we had 40s, 20s, and if it was poor quality, two lots between 2 and 10 acres. So those were all available even in the inception of the comprehensive plan. And I remember when I worked on the mapping process that I worked on what I called the cathedral map. Because what we did was to create a series of overlays that showed capability based on water, based on sanitation, based on soil, based on slope, and we overlay all of these limitations and you go to the lowest common denominator for limitations of land, and that's how we got the minimum lot sizes that went in the original comp plan of 2.5, 5, 10, 20. And the original zones were 10, even in a farm and forest and a woodlot. And then it got changed to 20s and above. So what I was looking at is, based on what we're doing, is evaluating the property, saying, is this forest land or not? If it is not forest land, then is it a policy decision on what the minimum lot size? And a 20-acre minimum lot size is just as arbitrary as an 80. And if you start putting in the physical limitation factors of sewer, water, slope, and all that, then you can have these gradations. And when, even in the current comprehensive plan, it says when you make a non-resource determination, it defaults to a 5-acre minimum lot size unless there is such onerous limitations, then it goes to limited development, and that's the 20-acre. And looking at the database for Josephine County, there's only one piece of limited development, and that's some pretty steep stuff that is split zoned on a piece of property over on Board Chaney. So it's when you go up the hillside on the west side of Fort Channing. So I'm thinking this alternative B, say if we have the opportunity to change the zoning, then there should be the ability to recapture the original zoning that people had or the intent. And if not that, which Measure 37 is supposed to do, if not that, to go back to the original ideas of the comprehensive plan that said the physical ability of the property to support development, whether it be farm, forest, residential, or other development, would be the determining factor instead of having a political decision that's impossible to substantiate or justify. And that's why I proposed alternative B.
Okay. Can I have a rebuttal? Or
not yet. Let's go around through everything. Maybe.
I'll wait until after Malcolm's rebuttal because I was basically going to say what Bob said.
Okay.
And I wanted to address the fact that the 20 acres does seem very arbitrary, whereas the 5, 10, or 20 would be based on the actual capacity of the land. It wouldn't just be everything would be arbitrarily zoned to 5, you know, it would be based on 5. On the ground, what really works for this
particular
Grace?
Okay. Well, I just want to say that we didn't plan on really solving this issue, you know, because what we want to do is just give some ammunition to the board to go forward on it, because, you know, when we started this, I had suggested, I would like to see the woodlot resource to be a transitional thing and to encourage actual woodlot production, not commercial forestry or industrial forestry, but small family woodlots, you know, if possible. So what I did is I actually was looking at the limited development zone in our code, and none of it mentions the intention that Bob says, that it says like 20 acre minimum, you can have a house on it, you can do farm or forestry practices and so forth. And then I thought, well, that generates another problem, is the limited development for resource land, or is it not a resource land? If a piece of property is legitimately non-resource and it can be established and it should go to residential, does that mean it's needs to take an exception, or can it go to non-resource land thing? It's highly complex, this whole thing. So, I mean, I am with Malcolm in the sense that I'd like to see large lots, and it does make sense in a really kind of logical way, because we've got our 2.5, and then we double that to RR5, and then we jump to 80 acres minimum. So 20 acres is a kind of nice interim, and it is, according to Mr. Bennett from the development, OSU over here, between 20 and 30 acres is encouraging the people to establish their own woodlots and so forth. So anyway, it's a balancing act. On the other hand, you know, what would the process be? And Bob really highly objected to limited development, and I understand his point of view on that. So there's a lot of loose ends in this proposal, but we were just kind of hoping to, you know, stimulate the board and get them to start a discussion on this. Look at all the other angles.
Okay. Malcolm, you go ahead and...
Okay.
I had a comment that's not rebuttal yet.
Oh, okay. Jack.
I think there's an element too. The board's view. The recommendation here is that the board of county commissioners unite for this objective. It would seem if they elect to do that, and that if a committee or a panel needed to do that, a lot of these definitions will be the duty, and we don't want to overreach and attempt to do what that panel would ultimately be charging. And what we'd like to do is see the commissionally and intentionally into...
Okay. Malcolm?
Okay, with regard to what Jack just said, I agree with him. The Board of Commissioners will do what they want to do with this other group if they do 3615, but I just don't want to encourage them. I mean, we are giving them recommendations, and I think I'm happier with the 20 acres. I agree with Bob. Woodlot resource used to be 10, and I'm not sure 10 acre minimum, and I don't remember why. I had some land that I had to rezone because I got caught up. As far as the 20, it's not completely arbitrary, because like Bob said, they would allow two lots. If you had like 30 acres or even 24 acres, I'd like to split off 2 acres off it, as long as you get 20 acres minimum for one of the lots. So that makes it a little bit less arbitrary. And basing the lot size on carrying capacity, to me, means just based on your septic and your well, because anything else you can get on just about anything. I mean, what's the carrying capacity other than, you know, transportation or something? You can get a septic and a well on one piece of property. Typically, you only need an acre. Now, we can't do an acre because the state doesn't allow it, but we could, the commissioners can go down here and say, I'll just take all the woodlot and go to 2 acres, because they could say carrying capacity, and if we go with carrying capacity, that means 2 acres to me.
Well, it seems like the more acreage that you allow to get down to the smaller, then you're going to meet the affordable housing requirements, because land become more affordable because there's a bigger supply.
That's probably true to a certain extent, Harold, but right now, and I've been trying to get numbers on this from planning for years, but I don't have any hard numbers. To me, we have lots and lots of land available for building houses on. I would prefer to keep the forest land, even the marginal forest land, in some kind of forest use as long as we can. At some point in the future, if we have enough development, enough population growth, then we can revisit this and look at splitting some of this stuff into smaller lots, but I don't see the point right now.
It seems to me, though, and I'm assuming one of the comments in the email, I don't remember who made it, is that it's easier to be able to manage a smaller size than it is the larger. I mean, you may be the exception to the rule because you're there, but you're talking about a population of folks coming in that don't have all of the tools that you have in doing something, and so they're going to be less likely to manage the larger piece, whereas the 5 acre or the 10 acre or whatever, that size is a much easier one and may fulfill the same thing and still protect some of the resource issues, that even though they're not resource lands. That would be, and I don't know who mentioned, but I know it was in one of your emails about the management of smaller, and I would agree with that. I mean, that
makes sense, Earl, but I wish I would have thought of this before you threw the idea out, but I wonder how many people belong to the Small Woodlands Association that have land that's less acres. I don't know. I'm not a member, but I've been to some of the meetings, and most of the people have 10, 20, 30, 40, 80 acres.
Yeah, excuse me. What Max Bennett said, who does kind of direct the Small Woodlands Owners Association, he said 10 acres, it's for visual wildlife protection and so forth. 20 acres, they start getting interested in actually developing a woodlot. 20 to 30, and then 30 acres, they get pretty serious. And then it could not be on. I mean, then it gets more commercialized forestry.
Sure. And I'll go to Peggy and then
Well, I'm going to give you a little different perspective on this. If you go around the county like I have for 34 years and you look at these RR5 subdivisions, and there are several of them out there that are maybe 40 or 50% developed that have out of control 5 acre independent lots that are not being managed properly, like Jack said, for adjoining property owners, because they're 5 acres is still a lot of land when you're talking about a 330 by 660 parcel of land. Somebody coming up from California used to living on a 0.07 acre piece of property. They get up here and they get on 5 acres and they're calling home and telling them about the ranch they just bought. Seriously. And the more intensive farming capability on smaller acreages has really been proven by a lot of the growers market people and what they're doing with the more intensive farming on the smaller parcels. And it's really interesting because talking with like Lyle Woodcock, that was his original intent, was to split his property, his ranch was an RR5, and make it into small farm parcels that people could grow agricultural produce on and have a home site. And the other part that is a little bit out of control is we've got 68% of the county that's controlled by the federal or state government that is in forestry. And then we met with the county tax assessor just recently, and when we asked her how many people pay full residential or full taxation on their parcels in this county, it came out to 8.9% of the entire population that pays their full share of property taxes, because so much of the private property even is under special forest assessment or special ag assessment. So we have not overdeveloped Josephine County, trust me, ladies and gentlemen. If anything, because of the parameters and the restrictions that they're putting on around the narrow capability of expansion around the UGB of Grants Pass, and because the Illinois Valley has less industrial development going on out there because we're not on the I-5 corridor for job bases, there's a lot more land available out there. Sure, there's more land available for development than we currently have people, you know, supply and demand. The supply is much greater than the demand. But I'll also tell you, you've got serpentine zone lands out there that are on two severe slopes that you're not going to get septic and well on, which is another category that nobody's taking into consideration. You've got RR5 ground out there that is not capable because of the slope for even putting in the proper driveway access. I know I've had a couple of them turned down for the fire protection issues that are required now by the state. And so, you know, really, we're really a lot more limited than you realize. And I think that, again, I'm kind of going along with Bob in that I don't know in all cases that it should be 5 acres or 10 acres or 20 acres, But I'll tell you, I see a lot of abused 5-acre parcels around this county that are not being managed for what they should be managed for. And if they're in an RR5 zone, what, we're going to manage for residential? We're going to manage for, are they going to take 4 acres out and manage for timber? Which they can do. They can apply for that. And many people do. My dad does that, special forest tax assessment. But the problem is you don't have a lot of people that are doing that. And I really think we need to reconsider this. And it's, and part of the problem is that we haven't looked at this stuff because of Senate Bill 100. And I think that 2229 and 3615 really give us an opportunity to get something promising going for Josephine County that has so many restrictions and regulations on it already that you're not seeing a lot of people or companies or businesses feeling friendly about coming here.
Peggy?
Yeah, I just wanted to, another reason why they cut the arbitrary 20 is, why I object to that is because the process when this, when these lines were drawn, so whether it was arbitrary, it was not what the original zoning that was out. So a lot of this land that we're saying, well, we have to protect it because it is, you know, potential woodlot resource. Isn't necessarily really potential without people. And that's why I think it's important, instead of just having an arbitrary one-size-fits-all template that we put on it, that we just, we investigate and see what, if somebody wants to divide it smaller, we should see, well, is this really resource kind of land, or is this land that really is the highest and best use is residential for it? And then make the decisions based on the actual plot of land rather than just some abstract theory about this was converted to that, and now we can only convert it to this.
Bob?
Jack's comment that the intent of this is to get us into 3615 and 2229, I think is something that we really need to hold on, is yes, there's things that need to be done. And I think some of the things that we kind of lose track of when we start looking at this and start talking about minimum lot size is that not all woodlot should come out of forestry. Not all of it needs to be converted, because when you look at the statutes and the requirements in the comprehensive plan, it says everything under 4 is supposed to be woodlot. So everything between 3.5 and 4.0 is woodlot resource, but it's still forest land. And so I don't see those converting at this point. And those will provide some of those buffer lands next to the forest land. And as Jim said, yes, there is a lot of limitations out there, physical, such as slope and granitic soils and water problem areas that limit the ability to go down to the 5-acre. And one of the things that I have seen comments and studies on is that the urban growth boundaries in the state of Oregon are driving up land development costs because of limited supply. And if we try and use this vehicle here to try and preserve things for the ultimate conversion in the future, it's still going to have that same kind of chilling economic effect by locking it up for not a good reason, but just for a philosophical reason, that it's not really good forest land to begin with, as we're talking about when we do the actual analysis on 3615 and come up with a new definition. I think we're going to start working with that 3.5 and say if it's above 3.5, it should still stay in forest. But if it's below 3.5, it has no reasonable expectation of making a profit and money to try and grow trees. That's what the analysis was all about, is this something that somebody would invest in to grow trees? And the absolute answer is no, it can't be done. Same thing with farm. When people start looking at farm resource, it says, everything that's class 1 through 4 is by definition agricultural land. But when you read Handbook 210 and see what the actual definition of land capability class 4 is for agricultural purposes. It says you may only be able to grow 2 or 3 crops on that land and expect a profit. And you can't expect a profit in every year, and in some cases, almost 50% of the time, you can expect that you're not going to make a profit. And so if you're not going to make a profit, you're going to lose money half the time, then that's not the land that you want to protect for farm use. And so some of these discussions, they need to flesh out, and that's what the next test is going to be. And one last thing is, the real estate agent that sold me my property in 1978, I talked to him the other week, and he says, are you still living in the same place? I go, yeah, we've been there for over 30 years. He says, darn, that's one of the things that I couldn't expect. He says, because I usually expect 3 sales on a piece of property when people first come to the area. First, they buy a nice big piece because they came from the city and they want to be out in the country. After they've lived there about 5 or 6 years, they figure it's too much. And so they sell it and move into the city because it's easier to take care of. And then they're there for another 5 or 6 years, and they go, I didn't move here to be in the city to begin with, so I want to move back out of the country, but not on the big piece of property. So we need that range of properties to be able to give people the choices for the lifestyles of why they come to this area to begin with, and the things that you need to keep focused on is this land really resource land to begin with? If it's not resource land, there's no reason to try and protect it, and that's where the logic of the Oregon system starts to fall apart, because a lot of things are put into a nice tight box that don't work.
Okay, Bill, and then Kit.
Actually, I have some experts. Alternative B, how much bureaucracy is involved in managing a plan?
How much bureaucracy?
Yeah. Who says that my piece of land qualifies for 5 acres, that Jim's qualifies for 10? Who manages that or supervises that or makes those calls?
Well, from my experience, when we did the original plan to try and work with it, that was a staff recommendation to the Board of County Commissioners based on looking at the land, looking at the physical maps that showed conditions, whether they be water, septic, slope, or all those other things, to come up with a proposal of this is why it should be 5, why it should be 10, or why it should be 20, based on physical factors. And then it went into the political process where the Board of County Commissioners looked at the same information, heard the staff report, and then they opened it up for the property owners to come in and say, I agree with it, I don't have a problem, or no, I don't agree with that, and you need to put me in this or put me in that. And one of the best examples that I can give you is out off of Leonard Road. You look at Leonard Road at the very top edge, that's where the edge of the urban growth boundary is, and you can see everything below Leonard Road is in the urban growth boundary, and then it goes into a gerrymandered line, summer in, summer out, and that's based on personal preference that the board said, okay, you want in, you want to develop city standards, okay, you don't want in, you can stay out. And that's kind of how that is there is an adjustment factor based on property owner preference, because I may sound foolish, but I figured the people that own the property should have the final word on what they're going to do with it one way or another. You know, we can guide and, you know, look at, you know, what's the best thing for the economy of the state, but still there should be some deference to the property owner of what they really want to do with the land. And that's how we get to those gradations.
Okay, Kit.
Okay.
with regards to the woodlot resource, what percentage of the woodlot resource land currently zoned woodlot resource is over 20 acres?
I figured that Bob tells me they're wrong.
But it's a relatively small percentage, am I correct?
Yes, over 20 acres, okay.
70% of the acreage at issue, right, that goes to the IRR.
66%, 222 parcels over 20 acres in size, so like 34%.
Okay, so 34%, and the next buffer size would be forest commercial at 80 acres.
Right.
So, in the interest of simplifying, 20 acres makes more sense.
Okay. I saw somebody else's hand up. Okay, Jack.
I had wanted to comment on the bill.
Okay, go ahead.
As I understood his question, it was how much based on suitability of the land. In any of these applications, they have to be water, which is Malcolm's concern. They have to worry about deer and catastrophic water.
Sure.
All those things are already on their plate. So by saying 5, 10, or 20 based on the actual carrying capacity of the land, I don't think makes matters any more difficult for the planning department. You know, and
The planning department would be the ruler on compared capacity of that land.
Well, we go to a public hearing. I think what Jack's saying is, correct me if I'm wrong, Jack, right now we're doing it in the rezone process, but you're proposing us to do that in administrative capacity instead.
A legislative capacity first.
Okay. Now, you're creating a legislative.
We're getting too many conversations going, and we got to make sure we get the minutes. So.
The 3615 group, the ultimate specifics would be for a legislative purpose.
Right.
And we're not trying to jump there. We're just trying to make that group eventually work for us.
Okay. I thought you were talking about legislating a administrative process to determine if, okay.
They might do that.
Okay, Malcolm, you had your hand up.
Okay, first I just want to make clear, I'm not talking about farm resource for, I don't have an objection to bringing farms down to 5 acres. I think 5 acres is the popular size for farms. My concern is with forest. Because forest land isn't all about profit, in my opinion. There's other values to land besides how much money it's going to make. Nobody's going to get rich off any forest land. They have to start doing all the planning and planning and everything in square one. However, I would not be opposed to smaller lots on land that has less than 3.50 IRR. I didn't feel like we clarified that in this proposal, did we? Anyway, I didn't get it if we did. And we currently have ways to change the zoning from woodlot resource to residential for lands that's less than 3.50. Unfortunately, they're pretty onerous. They're expensive. And I'd like to see it made a little bit easier. But I think it's getting harder. From what I got from James today, it sounds like the state's telling us that we now have to hire a forester and do a productivity examination on any land we want to rezone, even if it's less than IRR. And I always thought IRR less than 3.5 is a shoe-in if everything else works. So that would be my last statement there, I guess. I don't have much else to say.
That could be easily a comment.
Yeah, that would be a
comment. Just a slight editorial change in the write-up. Mm-hmm. We could say...
Whereabouts are you, Jack? Whereabouts are you in your document?
I'm on the third page, recommendation 2, alternative B, and moving into the... second and third line. Lot sizes could be reduced to allow further economic benefit to sizes of 20 acres or where IRR less than 3.5
or
10 acres.
Mm-hmm. That sounds good.
Say
that one more time.
Okay. Lot sizes could be reduced to allow further economic benefit to sizes of 20 acres or, comma, where IRR of less than 3.5, 10 acres or 5 acres, based on the suitability of land to support the increased density.
But that doesn't address the farm.
Yeah, I was just going to say that.
But it's woodlot resources.
So if they're combined both of them and all of this,
so
they have to.
Well, the IRR doesn't apply to farm issues,
no.
And I don't think that there's anything in here. We don't have what they call a LISA system, which is the land evaluation and site assessment that equates for farm use to be able to make those creations. So that's something that the new committee, if we're in 3615, struggles with. What do we do about farm, because it's for class 1 through 4, and with new definitions on class 1 through 4, some of the stuff that's 20 to 35% slope is considered class 4 agricultural land, and I go, who in the right mind is going to try and farm soils where there's a 30% slope? That just doesn't make a lot of sense to me, unless you're doing a very specialized wine crop,
marijuana crop.
But no, I've seen some very steep areas that are planted in grapes, but they're very high maintenance and high dollar operations to be able to send pickers in and take care of that. And if you look at places throughout the world, I've seen vineyards on 40% slope in Switzerland. They're just gorgeous, but they're really hand manicured. And is that something that you're going to protect that, or is that something that the property owner is going to make a choice? So I don't think farm is one that we need to address here. The easier one for us to address here is the forest issue.
I think that's a good editorial comment that both can be accommodated by switching the language. Forget the earlier change. Okay, we're going to have economic benefits to sizes of 5 acres, 10 acres, or 20 acres based upon the suitability of the land to support the increased density, comma, provided that if the land is woodlot resource, the lot size shall be 20 acres unless the IRR is less than 3.5.
I like that.
That's fair enough. I think that's so clear.
Okay.
Sounds good.
Okay.
That sound okay?
That sounds much better.
Okay. Thank you.
Grace? Oh, I just want to say again, to reiterate what Jack said earlier. This is so complex, and any recommendation we make, then the process has to be determined. And so, I mean, we can't think we're going to solve anything or make the perfect recommendation at this time. It's going to require a lot of study, another panel, a lot of time, a lot of thought, a lot of background research, and the objective is to get the Board of County Commissioners on board with this and to move forward and do something.
In saying that, the better written and the more concise
right.
our recommendations are, the better chance they have going through.
Exactly. I agree. Yep.
So
okay, anybody else have any comments at this point? I think what I'm going to be looking for would be a motion, because we do need to get this to the board fairly rapidly. In regard to 3615, it had their one hearing on the 16th of May. It's been in a holding pattern. I believe it's coming out. Sean Jillians as well, and they both indicated that it has moved. It is starting to move out, but it's still not on any hearing schedule. I keep an eye on that, and I haven't seen it. But they have to make a decision between now and the end of June. So it's going to be one of those that it's an hour before they have a meeting that it's going to hit the floor in a committee. It's got to go through, still go through the committee. It's in a
judiciary.
No, it's in the Joint Natural Resources Ways and Means Natural Resource Committee is where it stopped. So it should move through there. It sounded like, according to Hicks, that it should move. So the 1,000 Friends of Oregon and League of Women Voters were in objection to it because they have not been a party to the putting it together. And so that's going to be an issue, I'm sure, when they get to the full hearing process. But again, I think we've got to move this to the board at this point so that they have something to work with. And I would agree, there's going to be a whole other series of hearings and involvement before they ever get to a final decision, but at least it's providing them some
direction
and opportunities. So, Jack, you have your hand up.
Yeah, I want to make the motion. I mean, I'm behind the drafting on this. I move that we adopt the report and recommendation with the deletion of the very first paragraph, with the deletion of recommendation 2, alternative A, and with the adoption of the last recommended editorial revision to alternative B, recommendation.
And
with the modification of income in recommendation 3.
Okay, is there a second?
Second
by Peggy. More discussion? Malcolm?
Just, we were talking about making it fairly clear and fairly straightforward how we're going to do this. It sounds like we're going to just not go there because we're in a hurry to get to the commissioners, or we're going to cut later. Or...
You mean as far as the specifics here?
Yes.
I think that's going to come later. I mean, that to me is going to be additional discussions down the road.
Well, I think it'd be good that the commissioners might have to think about how we're going to do this. If we can cut it easy way. I can see a lot of different potential ways to decide which lane gets to go to 5, which goes to 10, which goes to
20. So to me, I think what the process is, this is to get to them so they then have something to say, we need to get out there and support 3615. Okay. Now, some of this additional stuff, they may want to take to the Planning Commission, which that's their choice.
Okay.
And that then opens the door for more discussion and, again, the public process. And you can provide the data or the information in that process, and that's the process that would be used to make the change anyway.
I'm real impressed with how well this went today.
It is, because it's a tough discussion. Bill?
Questions?
Yeah.
If we adopt this in the PCCs, would this plan have to ultimately be coordinated with the other two counties?
No. At this point? Yeah, it would. I mean, the whole process, this was to give them the opportunity to say, we got to move forward, but it'll also give them something to work with when they get together with the three counties.
Well, yeah, it seems to me from the commission, having two alternatives gives them some flexibility.
Yeah. At this point, there's Jackson County, all three commissioners are supportive of 3615. Douglas County, all three commissioners are supportive of 3615, and Josephine is 2 out of 3. At this point, and I don't know whether that's changed or not, but again, it's a point to give them something to work with and move forward. And even with the two out of three, it's still going to move forward. But I know that Jackson County folks are concerned as to how involved Josephine's going to get, and they're prepared to move without Josephine if they need to and go with Douglas County. That's, I know that for sure. Jack?
It's a little bit in reference to Bill's question. Nothing can happen on this unless the three specific counties, Douglas, Jackson, enter into an memorandum of understanding.
Or any two. It doesn't have to be three.
The two related to 2220.
No. The amendment, the Jackson County specifically asked that it gives them some flexibility, that it doesn't require all three, because they didn't think at the time that Josephine was going to work forward, and they wanted to be able to move forward. So they've got language in the amended version to give that option for two.
I think the understanding that open the door to the possibility down the road to drag some of them.
Well, that's
true.
Who's
actually behind 3615 and is left out in the cold. That's what none of this can happen
right
initially. Engaging in the memorandum of understanding.
Yeah, so I know the language in there for Klamath and Deschutes is there, but at the end, yeah.
Right.
But again, I'll have to go back to read it. Yeah, that's part of it. Okay, so.
May I have Jack make his changes and then email it to me so that we will have it.
Okay.
Correct.
Did you catch what she said? To email her the your changes.
Reread.
No, just email her the changes.
Email it to her.
Email it to her so she can put it into the record, and then we can do it from.
Yeah, I'll
clean it up.
Redraft it with
the change language.
Does somebody want to hear it?
Yes.
Okay. With each of the proposed.
Yeah. And I'm hoping we can deliver that tomorrow as well, if possible.
Tomorrow.
Better leave
it out
there
at night. Where are you going home? No, it's only correcting a couple of paragraphs. Adding a phrase, ain't that hard?
We'll be done before. I'll let you get out of here early.
I came up here to retire.
She can't give you a minute to eat.
My only reason for saying that, Jack, is because I don't know whether that 3615 is going to hit the floor tomorrow or the next day, and it would be good if the commissioner saw this and
in advance
and could either let David know, because he's working with Jackson and Douglas, I think.
All right.
So that's my only value on that.
Well, let's see if it passes. I'm pretty good about it.
Well, you don't think your motion will pass?
I don't. Oh,
okay. Any more discussion? All those in favor of the motion, you understand the motion. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, motion passes unanimously. Thank you. And I appreciate, again, the discussion. I think it was well worth the time and effort. And I really want to thank the committee. I think to take on the magnitude of what we had and move this and do it in a good professional manner, even though you had some disagreements. But, Jack, I really appreciate your putting that effort into it. So what we'll do with this is once Jack gets the amendments in tonight,
tomorrow morning,
we will deliver, I'll hand deliver this to the board if we can tomorrow. I'm going to deliver the letter, but that way they'll have it and it will be recorded. Okay. I got so interested into this discussion, I lost my agenda. There it is. It looks like we're just going to have to continue the number six item until the next meeting. So Gordon's not going to be here. Mm-hmm. Matters from committee members, and we have on here the subcommittee, the Turner Scott properties. I don't think we're prepared. This is sort of a placeholder unless you are ready. I have told Turner we weren't going to have anything, but if you do, he's here. And
I think at this point, the report is in order. I'd like to explain what the problem is and the potential of resolutions that we've come up with. Turner owns one piece of property, and a portion of that property was acquired, or an easement was created in behalf of the BLM for purposes of protecting the wild river characteristics of the road. And that portion of his property, a quarter of the on the riverfront, is subject to that federal easement. And in the acquisition, and it was all done very legally and legitimately, eminent domain, creating an as allowed in the lovers. The easement that was acquired gives to the owner. They did not divest him of the ownership. All they did was establish a set of rules of what he could and could not do with that riverfront property, portion of his property. There are very limited uses, and one of the approved uses was that he could take his 40 acres and construct four riverfront residences. So, the Ohio River, we're all good with that. Then we get into the county doing its thing, because obviously in this circumstance, the property is subject to jurisdiction. First of all, his property was initially zoned to RR5. This is going back to the period 1981 to 1995. So that the at that point the subdivision into four residences on the riverfront was perfectly allowable under both the federal easement and the county code. However, as we have found, 1985, we became confronted with Woodlot Resource, and the property was rezoned to list of the easement of things he cannot do is he cannot cut trees. And zoning by the county is saying pretty much he's got to preserve this land for the purpose of cutting trees. So we've got the two jurisdictions working at cross purposes in the particular case. That's the problem. Okay. Now, scratching our heads about it, the obvious answer was to get this woodlot resource business done away with, which I think we just care of, at least recommendationally. So that's possible to go from there. But the second thing, and I'm interested in whatever input planning or anybody else wants to give us, we think that our county land use plan should incorporate some provision that would speak to coordination with federal activities. It's like, and I'm prejudiced this way, I'm on another committee, which is exactly that. It's a coordinating committee where we're trying to put together a plan for county coordination and federal coordination on the use of the public lands. This is just the backside of that coin, that the county's plan should give some accommodation and to what the feds are doing. And short of that, I'm out of ideas. But those two jump up.
Jim, you have anything to add to it?
No, he's covered it really well. I mean,
just to try and put it in context, if there's any forest potential there, based on the physical things of the land, and as we heard the discussion a little bit earlier, the state moved the goalpost again by saying that the IRR system is not king of the road, and we have to do an analysis based on the timber potential of the property using a professional forester. If we try to do it in the context of the current system, a conservative estimate, if there's no opposition, just to go through the hoops would have to logically be a reasons exception. And to do a reasons exception based on the specifics of the permit or the scenic easement, I would say it's a minimum of a $50,000 project just to do all of the required steps that the state has put forth to try and do that kind of analysis. Because I did a reasons exception for a piece of property because of the river, and it was a logical place to be able to put a river-oriented process. And just today, that's the kind of hoops that people are having to go through. And when the system puts those kind of obstacles in front of somebody, that's what this committee was supposed to look at, is there some other option besides going through a bureaucratic process that's so long, drawn out, and expensive? And I think this may be something, and I know this isn't the only one because there's a lot of land. I'm working with some people on the other side of the road, on Canal Road. They've got an approval through the BLM easement that they can put three houses on the property. And it's split zone. So this is not a unique kind of a situation. So there needs to be something that if there is an overriding authorization, that there has to be a way to get through the process without having to go through that kind of a bureaucratic mess. I think there may be something that we can graph to come up with that coordination of the...
If somebody has some recommendations on, you know, A, in the circumstance of concurrent jurisdiction, which is really what we're up against here, that the Fed shall control, that would solve the problem. Alternatively, Muzzy and say the two would have to, Hannibal, which I think the board would, you know, have nothing to do with the problem. Tell me what we think, and I can write it up and bring it back next month.
Right.
Not tomorrow?
No.
For me, next week.
Next week.
We can be next week.
Great.
But
there's already a statute that says the different jurisdictions need to coordinate, but they handle that with the LUTs, land use compatibility statements, which are kind of meaningless. You just, you know, they spin off on it. There's no real coordination as yet. I don't know what we could put in real. I mean, it is a form of reality, but it's not the kind of coordination you're talking about. But it is mandated, and how it's done, I don't think is mandated.
But is the process today acceptable by the county and by BLM?
In the federal system, regarding the federal lands, both the Lands Management and the Forest Service acts speak to and impose necessity of the federal coordinated with a local plan if there is one.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where the mandatory part of it. But as far as our land development code, is there anything there in coordination?
I think the way to try and approach this is one of those specialized things, an overlay zone. That if it's within a scenic easement, that there's some special key things that can occur. So it would take a text amendment to do that, and it would also need state compliance or coordination with that, because Trenor's in a forest zone, and to put the houses on, you need to have it meet the state statute on locating houses in the forest zone, unless there is a built-in exception of this type of overlay that the state can say, yes, we will accept this kind of a exception of a special overlay to do that. And so I would think that there's the one of the first things to do, because there's a state component in here, is to call DLCD and see if there's some opportunity to talk about this with Whitman and Catherine Daniels. And I'll lay these kind of
things. Somebody else called them, don't I, me? They don't like me.
Yeah.
They're my fault.
I don't know why.
just kind of something that came to mind, but if Turner's property is mandated by the feds that you can't cut any trees, even if he was allowed to make four riverside lots, how would he clear for his house? You can't cut any trees.
There is some exception to that.
You can go through the process of buying certain selected trees around the home site.
Okay.
So that's dealt with. I mean, it's
all right. Thank you. I'm sorry.
But you do have to buy them because they belong to the sovereign.
Where are our planning guys?
Trenor and I had a discussion, I don't know, a couple of weeks ago, I guess, and kind of talked about what some of his alternatives are, and I think you'll agree that he has alternatives, they just aren't real attractive. a rezone, the four units along your frontage, how many acres is the piece again?
Well, I'm total was four, of which one is already sold, so I have three left. One is on rural residential already. So at the moment, I have two problems.
Two parcels.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, you're saying there was one parcel. So which parcel were you referring to?
makes it even more complicated.
He owns
the land is already partitioned.
We got two people talking.
Okay. The land is already partitioned into fives and larger pieces. And my real concern is placement of a house where a buyer might want to put it, rather than by some other system that may or may not be compatible. And the other...
Are you saying there isn't a problem, it's just a matter of convenience?
Well, I think that's a problem. Well, there is another issue. We ran all the various the templates and all that, and I discovered that at the end of the day, if you get one home site, you have to combine everything else, so you get one instead of two. And in that value of property, that's a fairly major impact.
Right. That's if it's a tract. If both parcels under your name, that's easily solved. Put it in another name, and it's not a tract.
Well, it depends if it was part of a lot of record request, and then it goes back to how it was owned at the time of acquisition, back to 1985, and Printer owned it back then.
Well, yeah, he could go that route. But he couldn't go that route.
But if he applies the lot of record on one, that takes the lot of record option away from any other property. He can't get two lots of record on the thing. So I don't know all of the specifics to see what the.
I guess where I'd like to get to is that this isn't, our committee isn't to try to solve that part of it. It is to figure out a process. And is there a process that we can make a recommendation? Because we can't make the decision. All we can do is make a recommendation. So what we need to do is identify the process that may work and get it to the Board of County Commissioners. That's what we need. And not get into the kind of discussions you have probably are the smaller little subcommittee types. Or
if I can answer Jackson, I'll turn them directly because he asked and I want to give him that. Our direction to Trenor thus far has been do a pre-app for a specific development plan. We respond to that, and then we need something to go with. And that's been the response from the planning department thus far. And that is getting to a specific decision about how to go about doing either rezone, land division, whatever the thing may be. That's our stance so far, is get into the process, apply for a permit, a pre-application, and then we respond to there from there. But if your committee is dealing with the broader issue of federal, county, or state, different agency coordination in scenic areas or with scenic easements, then I'll leave you to it and see what you recommend.
Scenic easement has been an issue for years and years because there used to be a zone called the Wild River Zone. And that dealt with some of those easement issues, and that zone went away when we had to file to bring it up to state standards, and the state didn't make provision for those kinds of things, and that's how we got state statutes so screwed up, is every time we ran into one of these things, then usually the property owner would go to the local legislator, they'd put it in as a bill, and if there was some kind of reason to deal with it, the state would deal with it. Just like if you look at exclusive farm use zones, one of the things you can put on an exclusive farm use is a model airplane airstrip. And another part of the EFU was to say that beekeeping is a normal farm practice. It's to deal with these specialized kinds of things. Is it a state statute kind of an issue? It's a real coordination issue because we've got three jurisdictions, and I think because of the scenic easement, that would be something that the legislature and the department, the LCD, should try and deal with because it's not isolated on just Prescott. There's the whole wild and scenic on the road, plus there's other rivers that fall in that same thing, and there needs to be some kind of a coordination to deal with that.
But scenic easements are purchased, though. So what are you saying? If someone sells a tank easement to the BLM, then what's the coordination issue then?
Part of it is the thing.
You're giving up the property right when you sell an easement, as Jim knows, whether it's access or a scenic easement or a view shed or, I mean, they're...
But one of the things that...
I'm getting away from Trenor's property, but it's a general question.
But looking at that, some of the things that happens is density transfer. If you sell a scenic easement and they create a density issue, then there may be a density transfer to some other lot in it. So there is an
either onsite or offsite. Sure.
To be addressed.
That's a planning tool that was in the code and not even been addressed.
Chad. The issue that's peculiar to this one is created in not a title in fee. They left that with the trend. And instead just took an easement, created this very convoluted order of what was an allowable use and what issues are not allowable, as in if you're going to build a house, you have to designate these trees or a height. All that is spelled out. It's a preemptive dilemma on land use regulation imposed by eminent domain.
But there's a price tag for it.
Yeah, I was going to say, you received compensation for that, didn't you, Trent?
Yeah, in old dollars.
I wanted to ask you a different question, David. In Curry County, you've got more of the same of what we're talking about with the Illinois and the Rogue River and some private ownership along those wild and scenic portions, maybe that have not been eminent domain categories. And I was just wondering if you knew anything about adjoining counties or other counties that have dealt with this type of issue on coordination involving these type of planning issues.
I think that the biggest incident in the state of Oregon and Washington deals with Columbia River Gorge National Scenic Area.
Sure.
And some of the temples there. And they have they've got some resource utilization qualifications on some of the lots. But scenic easement issues, primarily in the gorge, are dealt with site per site conditions. Color of the house, amount
right.
of trees, they get a bigger room, but at the same time, you don't bold face the mountain, bunk your house in the middle of it, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Preserve the view for others as well as home sites as well. I think there's probably some examples that could be taken from the Columbia Scenic Gorge, and they've been doing it a lot longer than the rest of us have. It's been in effect since, what was it, 82, 84, I think it was.
Early 80s.
So there's probably some circumstances there to lift some language to go to the feds and say, look, we'd like to implement at least the scenic view or scenic easement, corridor plans.
Could you make that recommendation to the county board of commissioners? I mean, in good conscience?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that's really what we need.
Mm-hmm.
That would be wonderful if we could at least open the door and start the communication on it.
And I think they're a little different for each state, but they're in compliance with the act.
So where do we want to go on Trenor?
Planning director in Hood River can tell us all about.
I just wanted to make that recommendation that if he knows that there's some templates out there that potentially could work as far as coordination on an issue similar to what Trenor's going through, it might give an avenue, another alternative, I guess you could say, for a Trenor.
So we can do that without a motion.
Okay.
So we'll ask for a report back at the next meeting.
Thank you, David,
for
doing this.
We've got resources over there.
Sure.
I'm a member of the Oregon Association of County Planning Directors. We've met with them. In Hood River County, Multnomah County, and Wasco County in Oregon, they deal with it. So.
Thank you.
Sure. Under other matters from committee members, I've asked Peggy. She'd been working on reviewing the chapters on our code and had done extensive work on about the first chapter. first four chapters, and she's gone into more detail than any one of us probably had when looking at this document. And I'd asked her to go ahead and put together what she had done to this point. And the question is where are we going to be going as a committee? Because this is pretty extensive, and this was one person, and I think everybody should have gotten a copy of this so you have a chance to look at it. But I'd like Peggy to talk a little bit about it and see where do we want to go. I think the objective is to find out if this committee, how much longer are we as a committee going to be going? Because this process that she's talking about is not something that can happen in 2 months or 3 months. This is a much more detailed involvement, but she's done a tremendous amount of work on this, and I really appreciate what's gone into this. And so, Peggy, if you just sort of give us a quick summary of what you've done, and what I'd like to find out from the committee is how far are we going to be going at this point? And the reason I bring this up is because on July 1, there is no funding for this committee. And the issue and the question that will be coming up as far as the board is direction, what board direction will they give to Dave Wechner as far as providing the staffing, Annie and his staff, for this committee to maintain itself from July 1 on. And so that's why we need to hear a little bit more about this and what kind of recommendation does this committee want to give to the Board of County Commissioners in regards to continuation. We are a two-year committee. But at this point in time, there is no additional revenues. And David did put together the expenses of the committee. But I'd like to hear from Peggy first, and then we'll talk about what we have financially, what we've spent financially on the committee, and just sort of where he as a director feels he can or cannot be at this point in time. So, Peggy, if you'd sort of give us a thumbnail on what you've got here.
When I first joined the committee in January, I think that I took a look at the ROBC and said, yeah, I've got 400 pages. I can read 10 pages a day and finish in 6 weeks. And my intent was to go through it and compare what's in the ROBC with what's in the ORS and the OARs. And what I didn't really take into account when I first embarked on this is that the only way to look things up to compare with the ORSs and the OARs is to do a full text search on selected search words in the relevant chapters. So it took a lot longer than I anticipated, and I only got through about a third of it before other time commitments came in, and I just wasn't able to continue. I went through the first four chapters. I wrote up what I found. There's actually one thing here that Malcolm pointed out to me. On the very last thing, under minor points number four, he pointed out that ORS 215.416 says the actual cost limits fees to the lesser of the actual cost or 250 for a director decision. But he couldn't find in there the part about the hearing officer decision, and that's actually under 215.422. So if anybody wants to go look that up, I just put it wrong. I didn't break out of it. So what? How did I realize how long it would take to do this? Instead of just trying to start at the beginning and plow through, I would have prioritized the chapters and done it in priority order rather than just but what I found, I can just review. I won't read out all the numbers of everything because you have it all in the papers. But the first one was about pre-applications, which is not mentioned in the ORS. I already brought that up, another one is notice prior to a decision shall be given to a property owner within 1,500 feet of a parcel and zone change is proposed or for your mining operation. The ORS actually says the notice should be given to all property owners when anything in the OIR about that. So we are more restrictive than the ORS there.
Do you want to answer some of the questions, or do you want to wait until we're all done?
Okay.
Just keep a little note where you
want. You've
done okay. I see you.
Another one is that that our code has been a development required multiple applications, the planning director determines that ORS said the consolidated procedure shall be available for use at the option of the applicant, not of the planning director. Helen says our development permit should be valid for 1 year from the date of issuance and be renewed for ORS says that permits for residential development on agricultural or forest land outside the UGB should be valid for 4 years, and extension should be valid for 2 years, and I think it's the LAR. So they actually are saying 1 year is actually violates, where they say it shall be 4 years and 2 years. Our code says a specific use permit discontinues for 2 years, the permit to expire and use to be abandoned. Now, this is something that says the ORS leaves up to the discretion of counties. I was just wondering if ours is more or less restrictive. Again, that's not mentioned in the LAR. Our code requires a site plan review for the expansion or reduction of public parking or maneuvering areas, and there is no mention of that in the ORS at all. The OAR only addresses parking in metropolitan areas, and all parking offices are granted in metro stations. So there's nothing at the state level that requires any kind of plan review for expansion or reduction of parking. Our code refers to conditions that require the applicant to provide on-site public facilities or to transfer of land or an interest therein to the public or to make off-site improvements to public land or facilities. And I couldn't find any mention of these types of terms in ORS or OAR. And it just seemed kind of odd to me that we would be requiring people to make off-site improvements to public land or facilities to be able to get a permit to. Our code says that the county may require curbs, sidewalks, and traffic circulation features. The ORS doesn't mention curbs, sidewalks, anything like that. The OAR does require sidewalks along arterials, collectors, and local streets in urban areas, but says nothing about rural areas. And it also requires curbs or sidewalks in parking lots that are greater than 3 acres. I don't think that we have any of those in rural Jefferson County. Amazing. Our code requires site plan criteria requirements for development coordinated efficiently with surrounding development patterns. That's something that is unique to our code, and I just thought the wording of that was very vague, and that could be interpreted in ways that could limit or restrict development of private property, where there really isn't any basis for those kinds of restrictions in the LIS. And then our code requires a renewal permit for hardship dwellings, requires a written acknowledgement from the DEQ stating the dwelling continues to be served by authorized sewage. ORS requires for periodic review of the hardship claim, but there's no mention of any required disposal system. And the OAR also addresses hardship dwellings, but makes no requirements. So those are the major points. Minor points, amount of fees are limited in the ORS. They're not limited in our code, but I would imagine that the ORS limitation. And the DCC shall appoint members to the planning commission to serve terms fixed in length by the board. The ORS actually requires 4 year terms. But I think that, and then in the back here, there are just links to all the relevant chapters of the ORS and OAR for looking stuff up. So, I went through these, and then I talked to Harold, and I said, Harold, this is it worthwhile for me to go through more of this, because I don't really have time to do that, and if we were going to do that, then it would probably make sense for individual members or subcommittees to look at what are the most important chapters to review and divide them up. I know that Malcolm's group did already review a good part of Chapter 7 with the Article 176. A lot of review committee that completed. We did review part of Chapter 6, but I don't know if the committee feels that it is worth reviewing other chapters after the ORS and OAR to see where we're more restrictive.
Okay, and again, the reason I bring this and how to bring it forward is because this is important sort of a turning point as far as I see this committee going and how much more time we're going to be spending. And again, without the staffing capability, if in fact there isn't going to be any staffing, how are we going to be proceeding? What do we do? Does the committee want to make a recommendation or a request from the Board of County Commissioners for additional funding and staffing by the planning office to continue our work? And how much more detail do you want to get into? Do you want to go through the kind of detail that, that Peggy has gone to and finish up some of the remaining chapters? I'm throwing all these questions out, but I want to get some feedback from folks on this.
I think part of this issue is, it's a question we should have addressed in the very beginning, right?
Yes. And well, we sort of did, but we didn't have the kind of, we didn't go to the kind of detail that she has.
And some of the issues of doing it in an approach like this are that the guys that write these OERs are paid to write it the way they write it, which is terrible. You know, the language itself is convoluted, it's confusing, and then if you really study it, it's missing parts. So that's one major reason. And then, most everybody here is pretty much sort of a novice at the language. So in some of these, for example, permits. You talk about the 2-year, and then there's the 1 year for the development permit that the state says 2 and 4 years. Well, the state is using the word permit for what we use as the approval for a land use decision. So it's really confusing. So for people who are not versed in the language, we could go on for 20 years. For people who spend their whole lifetime. So I personally, you know, would not want to go that route at this stage. And I think the topics that we did select were not exactly scientific, but we were responding, I think, to the issues that we've experienced working with land use issues and that the public, you know, like Trenner and so forth, have brought to our attention. So it was more of a practical, pragmatic choice than to go systematically through, you know, everything. So I personally, you know, and I can answer some of these questions real quickly, but I'm not going to. I think it would be exhausting, and I would not want to do it.
It's a lot more work than I
avoided, and that's my business.
But I would like to point out one thing. Is this shows you what's really wrong with our system.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because, as you've said, it's designed by professionals who talk another language. Mm-hmm. But when you bring somebody in that is a very intelligent person, mm-hmm. does research work, does that, and yet there's a disconnect between mm-hmm. the language and what it means and
right.
all of that. And so,
and look at the lawyers who...
And this, to me, that's a bigger issue than what we'll ever deal with here. But again, mm-hmm. it is a very clear as to why we have some serious problems with mm-hmm. our whole land use system.
I've actually brought this up to several people who are sitting on committees in Salem, both senators and state representatives, that they need to really go back and look at the bills that pass through these committees and then look at the attorneys that are drafting the Oregon administrative rules, because they're totally convoluted, comparatively speaking, to what the layman public believed that bill said. And several of those senators, they didn't do it in this session, but I think you'll be seeing that move within the next couple of years. They may change the Oregon administrative rules, especially depending on leadership changes.
Well, I know back when Bob Repine was a state representative, he asked for and had language in place to allow the legislature to participate in the review of the Oregon administrative rules, and the legislature wouldn't accept it.
That's what they should be doing. That's what they're getting paid the big bucks for.
But again, the question I think we have here is, do we proceed along the lines that Peggy has put in place, and where should we be going at
the I'm with you, though. I think that right now it's such a convoluted instrument that you'd have to go through and try and dissect that. And you can see how hard it was for her just with the amount of chapters that she went through in this. There's got to be a different methodology, and I think it's above our pay grade.
Yeah, but I'm impressed that David has already responded to the document, so he does have some response to that, but I think it would be better to have it shipped out to us
and try to go through it tonight if you could do that. As a committee, I think that would be well worthwhile to see what how the staff person has responded to this and go from there. But Jack?
Your two questions are, do we want to proceed with this evaluation, identifying, locating, and making recommendations in circumstances where our code is more restrictive than required by state law? My reaction is, that's what this committee is all about. We, unfortunately, from my perspective, believe that we've been dealing with earmarks rather than our legislative purpose. Each of the issues that we have addressed that have been brought to us have related to somebody with a dog in the fight. And we've taken care of them. We have not taken care of business. Our latest volunteer is the only one who has undertaken the business end of this. So my recommendation and feeling and opinion, we ought to proceed with this and do the job that the commissioners set us here to do. Now, if the commissioners don't want to fund us, that puts a whole new wheel on the wagon. We may as well go home and say, okay, you've disbanded this committee and we'll be done. Probably that decision on the part of the commissioners will ride on how good they feel about the recommendations and material we've already put up.
Okay. Anyone else got an additional 2 cents?
No. I think since Peggy missed, 16 or 18 meetings, I think we ought to do the whole time.
Sort of a makeup.
Yeah. So she's doing such a good job. She's really, really good at what she does.
Kit.
Well, if she's covered 1 through 4, and we did, we covered kind of 6 and 7.
Like 10 or 12.
There's 12 total.
But that's the only 10 total for the last two.
Yeah, subcommittees could be able to take over, you know, 1 or 2, and we could, you know, if we got funding, we could probably do it. What Peggy started, because it is what our charter was to do.
Yeah. Well, I'd say that what we did do probably wasn't the best approach, but we did get to the hot spots, and that's what I wanted to get
exactly.
us to get
but,
clear
but
that.
But if we were to continue, and divvy up the job of what's remaining to be looked at, it shouldn't be quite so onerous.
And as opposed to Malcolm's, I think that I've done my part.
She's laid out, to me, she's laid out a format that we could use, and I think it's a very good one. And but it's going to be a question, I think, from the funding standpoint, the issue is going to be the staff funding, because I think David could give you an idea of what that has cost us or cost the county at this point. And
that's true, too. But, I mean,
and the staffing basically is Annie and the planning staff and what other little activities that we have to have them do. The subcommittees and the task force basically have been manned by the people themselves and provided the documentation, so staff hasn't been assigned to those committees to do any work. It's this main body here, but I saw somebody's hand. Yeah.
I just want to say what a great job Annie's done.
Yeah,
really.
Yeah.
No, really.
Two thumbs up.
More comments? What's your preference? I mean, I guess my feeling is that we need to make some kind of a recommendation or request from the board as an official committee for continuation of staffing this committee through our term, which ends, I don't know what the date of the ending of this, we're into our second year now, so.
In September, right?
It began in March.
March of 2010.
2010. So
March 2012.
Yeah, it'll be March 2012.
Bill?
Does the staff have any hot thing?
We did ask that early on.
Yeah.
And didn't really get much of a response on that.
The problem that I have personally is that we went out and did public meetings to try to find out what the public is wanting. My interpretation is that because the public in whole really doesn't give a rip. Not like they used to. I mean, that we used to fill up rooms of hundreds of people that were upset and frustrated with what's going on.
but we didn't get any feedback from the community. We did from some of the folks, the Trenners and I think Ward's issue and some of those others, but as a whole, we didn't get what I was going to anticipate and maybe more concern or issues, and you're right, we did address those that were hot button issues, but there are a lot more here. There's a lot of other things that would help people, and maybe people have just given up and said, I don't want to mess with this anymore, type of thing. But Jack,
I would propose a motion that we request the Board of Commissioners to May 4th that we have enjoyed to this because we have a table. And so,
it would be for the remainder of the term, which goes to 2012, March 2012.
Yeah, March 12th.
March 12th, 2012.
That would be my
That's
motion.
A motion. Is there a second?
Sure.
Okay, there's a second discussion. Do you have anything you want to say?
Well, a second discussion is to address
the motion,
the funding portion.
Yeah, the staffing.
I did not include additional monies for the next fiscal year because when Harold and I first met and I was putting in my budget back in April, the feeling at that time was to be wrapping about July or maybe month into July or maybe even August, but for administrative costs. And you've probably seen the figures on actual administrative costs are not that much, frankly. It's copying and postage and that sort of thing, about $400 or $500. My concern is staff time. The staff time for the first fiscal portion of the fiscal year, March 2010 to June 2010, was $15,000, and this year it's been about $22,500. And with any recommendations that come out of, I mean, just to get you through your committee meetings and get some recommendations, then the real work starts. And that's my concern, because then we go to the Planning Commission and the board and work through the issues. And so I think that number gets multiplied by two at least, maybe three, before we end up with something in the code that actually makes it. In the meantime, we have a code that hasn't been really updated and codified since 2005. So there's plenty of work on the back burner already. Say that to sway one or the other, but those are the numbers. And that's answered Bill's question. Board program being proposed to the Planning Commission is in order with her in terms of other issues that the staff has seen and I've seen since coming here, that some housekeeping stuff that I think will make things smoother and cleaner in the process. We're working a couple of the issues that Mark had actually addressed. So.
Could those be brought to us as part of our function? And that's, I mean, I don't know what it is that you have in your work part, but it looks like we're duplicating something here.
I don't think we're duplicating effort, but there may be a parallel process. Yeah.
So it might be good to somehow include at least the information side to this committee that we could at some point provide input to them. So that would be my suggestion as a thought. it's encouraging that. So any other comments or questions? If not, everybody understand the motion?
I have a question.
Yeah?
Do you have any idea how many hours it takes to get through this? I'm just curious how many people are willing to
put in the time. I wasn't counting.
I wonder if the committee's interested in anything like as much work as it looks like.
Well, how much, like you folks, your little committee that you had, I think that's probably a good example of the kind of time it would have taken to at least taken that chapter and that issue. And you didn't get into the kind of detail that she did, I don't think.
Right, and ours was different because we weren't trying to compare the ORSs and the OARs. And I've done some research on OARs and ORSs, and it can get really convoluted going, this one references this one, that references this one, that references this one. I'd be nuts, personally.
Right. No, we were just looking for specific things that we can simplify in common sense. Mm-hmm.
But just based upon the time that you spent on just that part of it, and then you add another.
I'm
going to say this is what Peggy did. It looks like it would be a lot more time consuming to me.
Than what we.
Do you have a feel at all by chapter how much time you spent on it?
I couldn't. Back in January and February, but it's been a lot.
I just remember when I was working for the county when the new aggregate resource regulations came out. I'm sure it took weeks to track everything down, then interpret it. And then you and it did the same thing. It referred back in on itself and to other ORSs and OERs. And even then there were things missing. I was thinking, am I getting it? Is it me? Am I just not getting it? But there were literally things missing in it once you really get into it. And it took me weeks.
Yeah,
I
actually recall
pulling
up the reference, and I went and looked it up. It wasn't even there.
Yeah. Okay, we're sort of getting away from the motion, but at this point in time...
It's hugely time-consuming, frankly.
Well, the motion is to continue our committee, recommend that the commissioners provide the staffing for continuation of this committee through our term, which is March 12, 2012. No more discussion. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Better go back, show of hands. All those in favor of the motion, raise your hands. One, two. Those opposed? One, two. Okay, motion carries, 4-2. Okay. Opposition is Jim and Grace.
Now, the motion was to continue the meetings. Is it to continue the meetings with the process that Peggy started?
I think that's going to be our next discussion. Okay. I'd like us to be prepared to be able to discuss the process, because we should have an answer from the commissioners at the next meeting, so that we can sort of... That's my... Yes?
I would like to maybe simplify this just a little bit and talk about addressing the chapters that we haven't addressed in a more simplified method. You know, go through them and read each chapter and see if there's anything that's glaring that... And sort of attack it the way we did part of the 76. And rather than try and compare OAR and...
That is a really, really tedious problem.
Yeah, this looks really tedious.
Yeah.
If proposal, why not we add to the agenda for the next meeting a conditional item that if the Board of Commissioners wants us to continue, we at that point create a procedural.
Good.
Mm-hmm. That would be good.
Everybody a month to chew on it. And,
You're still saying,
okay. Yeah. Okay. And this brings up another issue, is there's two vacancies at this time on the committee. One is, of course, the Planning Commission alternate. The other is the at-large, and we've chosen not at this point to fill the at-large because we figured that the committee was going to at least probably end in a much shorter period. Now, if we're talking about going through March 2012, then we should look at filling the position. Now, I don't think we need to fill the Planning Commission part of it, but at least the member at-large. Is that something that you want us to
do?
He's on the Planning Commission. He moved into Ron Wright's permanent spot.
It's because a little
Ron,
muddy still.
No, it's not.
It hasn't been confirmed by the board.
That's a whole other arena.
So I can vote.
Yeah.
Anyway, so
you are the Planning Commission representative at this point in time. You took that spot, so that's another discussion that we're going to have.
He's not official, but he is.
Well, he's the Planning Commission alternate. He's the alternate on our committee. Based upon the past action of the Planning Commission.
If somebody wants to bounce for it,
the Planning Commission is the nominee in the Nominees Committee.
Huh.
Yeah, that was it.
We need to look at the order.
But it's just a technicality.
Order,
like a right way.
The original order states that...
He's the alternate. Yeah. And he takes the position. Yeah. If the permanent member is not there, then he's the one that's...
Not that I disagree, Harold.
No, I'll have to talk with him.
But,
I think I've
been, it hasn't been voted on.
I think I've acted in the position, but not official.
He didn't
take
it. I
checked
everything. Do you have it? Do you have it?
But we have a member of the Planning Commission here, too.
The original...
I thought the original order.
The original order?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah, it has. Well, maybe we can talk about that at some point. Anyway, my question is, do you feel comfortable in moving forward with making a request to the commissioners that we fill the at-large position? And if so, they need to do an advertisement, and that's one of the other problems with the length of time it takes for the process to get through us filling the position, Grace and then Jack.
I mean, as I see it, it's a process. First, we ask if they're going to continue the committee, and then if they agree to, then we fill in the at-large, and then decide on the process.
Mm-hmm.
That's how it looks like.
All next month.
Huh?
All next
tomorrow.
Month.
Yeah.
Not tomorrow.
Not tomorrow. How about next Monday?
No.
No. So I guess I'm trying to get feedback as far as if you folks are comfortable with moving, if in fact they decide that we want to move forward of again filling that at large position, so we fill out the position. And the other issue out there is going to have to be resolved some other way, I guess.
I do have a question for the people that are actually in the planning. Planning business, yes. Mm-hmm. Instead of somebody like me who's just an at-large person who's sort of like, whoa. Do you feel that we've addressed the rural code enough that we've covered the chapters that need to be addressed?
I don't. No. I mean, there's all kinds. There's so much.
I mean, but to be, you know, in order to make it worth continuing this through lunch, because I'm not involved in it on a day-to-day basis,
right.
And so I can look at stuff and say this makes sense, that doesn't make sense. But you know, do you feel like maybe you know 6 more months or 8 more months
will make a difference to me?
I
think the code needs to be redone. Part of it depends on David and what he said.
Well,
because he said, you know, he's got a parallel process to update the code, and I don't know how much or where he's going to be putting that in. You know, from what I see, we've hit a few hot spots, but it hasn't gone to the core of the code of checking for consistency and a lot of the things, like the stuff that Gordy was going to talk about tonight, that just hasn't got there, and that's the issues of plans that are required, what's the basis for them, and how are they impacting the system. You can talk about that for a couple of meetings without any sweat. So, no, the work isn't done, and there's plenty of work that still needs to be done from my perspective as a professional in the system.
Okay. And my next question is it seems like this is pretty expensive to continue and organize if, you know, be up the rest of the chapters or something to subcommittees in order to make this a viable committee in the remaining.
Okay, that's great.
And if you continue, like, we do not know really what you are working on and your staff. So that would duplicate, like there's different types of chapters process. Are we going to work on process, you know, hearings, fees? Are the fees accounted for? Yes, they are. They were at that time, you know. And are we going to work on those types of things? Or are we going to work on, or is your staff, you and your staff already working on that? Or
well, we're...
So we don't do
that's a good point. I like what's going on. I think you've got a new set of eyes.
Mm-hmm.
He's reviewing what's been going on in our county.
Mm-hmm.
I think it would be good to get a report from him. He's been here, how many months have you been here now?
Sure.
You're an old-timer.
Started March 1st.
I would agree. He's probably working on things that we wouldn't have to duplicate. That's why I was saying if he could share with us what he's doing with that planning commission, then we could reduce what we're looking at if possible and more concentrate on this area over here. So that's, I think it'd be worthwhile maybe to have on our agenda next week a report from David. What did I say?
Next week,
sounded good to me. It's pretty consistent, isn't it? I've always got you guys to do
this. Part of what I need to do is go to the planning commission, work with this work program, and get it signed off and done too.
So you've got a meeting this next 2 weeks or next week with a workshop.
Yeah, we've got a slug of meetings
here. So that's fine.
A couple of months, so we've got.
But before our next meeting next month, maybe you could have a report for us.
Sure.
Jack?
It seems to me that the question over here was what's the value of what we're doing? Mm-hmm. And value of what we're doing relates to that 8.9% of the property owners goes to the point mentioned in our earlier recommendation that 30% of the land mass of this county is all that we have to exploit and make this economy work. And that it is a prohibitive restriction in our development code that is frustrating the highest and best use of land economically. It needs to go away, and that's the value of what we need.
Malcolm?
I have some concern about funding for this process. It's going to cost the planning department X amount of money and then two or three times that much by the time you go through all the hearings and the planning commission meetings and everything. Is that feasible for you as a commissioner? Are the commissioners able to give you enough money to do this, or is this going to put you guys in a worse hole than you're already in?
The planning department last year was 75% development review funded. That ranks us, and these planners here in the audience can probably attest to the fact that that's pretty good, actually,
mm-hmm.
75%.
Mm-hmm.
So we were a draw in the general fund this year of about $140,000, I think, to fund the office. Development permit fees are not rebounding the way that we would hope. So my big problem is what happens to the ONC funding next year. I've been told that there will be no general fund support as of June 2012.
The planning.
Yeah.
And
my department is myself and five staff people. And they're aware that the next June is, we'll probably be down a staff person at least, maybe two.
Take on this extra responsibility, there's no money going to be available from the general fund.
Well, I really struggled with, you know, in putting together my budget this year, that, you know, the board is telling me on the one hand, we're going to cut development fees so we can spur development, and on the other hand, you need to be 100%.
Right.
Funded by that, those development fees.
So that's kind of a
revenue reduction, and
there's an action more on
I can't think of an appropriate analogy. So that's part of the issue that we've got. Our development review revenue is going down. I don't think it's appropriate to go after a fee increase right now. So fewer developers are paying more of the fee. One of the things that we are looking at is proportionately trying to divvy up those development fees so that, bad analogy, maybe sentence doesn't crime. If you're a small, easy permit, you pay a small, easy fee. If you're a big deal, then you pay a big
permit. Yeah. Like
because what we're losing money primarily is on big, complicated land use applications.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that Peggy explored basically. One of the things that Peggy raised was that we have to assess fees either the average or the actual cost. And what I'm looking into right now is what happens if we go to actual cost.
Hmm.
And I don't have to necessarily, I can bifurcate my system. I don't have to go to actual cost on all the permit fees.
Mm-hmm.
I can go average on some, and I can go actual on others. And I think for the big applications that cost us a lot of staff time, where we're getting this fee for this amount of effort, that's where I need to go to time and materials and building like a consultant. And on those that are a little deal, not that big of a, and to help, again, spur the economy, like home occupations, right now it's a $2,000 home occupation fee for review. You know what those people do? They come in the front counter, their jaw hits the counter, and they turn around and walk out. And then we have neighborhood conflict. So anyway, that's
the point is, though, no money coming into you from us doing more of this work.
2012 is going to be a tough nut to crack.
I don't think this committee was ever designed to make sure they had money. I think our hope was that we could get a system down that would make it more efficient so people could come in and would be more encouraged to come in and make application and not be hit with an over-restrictive regulations that may be more
restrictive. I think I heard you say that the budget concern that he's in trouble is June of 2012, and in the best case scenario, we'll have been out of business by 3 months. So,
yeah. Okay.
But the real work for us starts after.
Yeah. But it's going to be there whether we do it or not. I mean, it's some, I would assume, somewhere down the line. Was there any other comments from committee members first, and then I'll open it up for citizens. We have actually gone over a little bit, but that's okay. Yeah, I don't have a clock, but I can't see the clock, so I'm sorry. Okay, who had a question from the committee? Okay. If not, then Ward, we do have two citizens that are here, Ward Ockenden and Turner Scott. So this is an opportunity for citizen comment. Comments on the phone.
The only thing I was going to say is that this is a very unfriendly county to do business in. Anybody that comes in here and wants to open up a business or move there or relocate here is in for a surprise. It is very unfriendly and very costly. With all the pre-app and the new application and the traffic studies and on those, it makes it almost cost prohibitive for anybody to be here. And that's, you know, that's the word on the street. I mean, and so that's a very big point. If you don't do anything else, let's make this a very friendly business community. And when they want to come in, I would cut those fees down by 90%. I mean, really would. I mean, let's make it so it's easy for them to get a permit and get going in here. And so that's a big issue here. I think that's one of the major issues we really have here. You know, that, and you know, we do have the land use issues as well, but that, you know, making this a business friendly place, we have to do it. It is not right now. It is very difficult. I mean, to get a permit to open up a business here would take you anywhere minimum probably a year and a half to 4 years to actually get a permit in your hand and actually have a building. It's impossible to do business here.
Okay.
So
my thoughts are a little bit along that line, but you mentioned there weren't many people showing up at the meetings you had. I think that's partly a factor of a slow economy. It may also be a factor of the flavor of what happens when somebody does try and get in a system like Ward is mentioning. And I think that would argue strongly for continuing to try and simplify and expedite, get this system working so that you don't wind up at Lube every time you turn around, because that's where a lot of the money goes. And if we can clean it up so that doesn't happen. Now, whether that's possible or not, I don't know. But
I have to tell you, it's not possible because you can't control the people that are doing the appealing.
That's right.
The Oregon land use laws, Turner, are so liberal that anybody can appeal. You can have the best evidence in the world, but if they don't want you there, they're going to tie you up for
a year. If you can make a system that's cleaner so there's less likely that when they get up to Salem, they have a problem. They come, you know, they get sent back saying, why did you bring this here? You know, I mean, I think there's enough of that.
Well, some counties have solved the problem by charging those folks that are not necessarily the applicant but are participants, and we haven't chosen to do that in this county. For information, when they walk into the office asking for information and they're tying up staff time, some counties actually charge them for that now, but this county doesn't. And when they did do that,
yes, we do.
Well, not like the other counties, because they're backed away from Jackson County.
Yeah, we charge.
That depends.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
That's good then.
Yeah.
Because I know that Jackson County really slowed it down because they all of a sudden stopped coming in and asking and tying up staff time. I can tell you, when I was commissioner, we wound up having to hire an extra staff person just for Mike Walker and Holder Summers. We cost us about $50,000 to hire one additional staff person just to deal with them and the phone calls into the office. And that's atrocious.
Yeah, and that was the commissioner's office.
Yeah, not to mention.
Well, no, I'm talking planning notes. We had to hire a planner, an additional planner, just to deal with those folks coming in and tying up the process. So It's a very convoluted problem, but it's frustrating, but I think it would be well worth taking the time to try to get it fixed.
It might be worth some discussion.
It is, and it, they tried it up at the legislature, and it got married the second or third day, but it's a very hot, sensitive topic, Bob.
The one thing that Peggy put on her thing is that you've got to be compatible with the surrounding land use. That's a very vague kind of thing, and I wound up having to deal at a LUBA level on a land use action for that single issue. And so, yes, how you put things in the code opens the doors for those kinds of appeals, and I don't think any thought on process just from the wording and opening it up for that was put into the original code, because I have to deal with that on a daily basis on how to deal with those things, and it is just not pretty. And one last thing is, I know I've put a lot of time in this, and I'm not even a voting member, and it's getting tough for me to volunteer my time to help do this. I don't know how this whole thing's going to go. One of the things that you're asking the board, if they want to extend till March of next year, then they need to say that with their wallet. Because one of the things, my firm resolution and thought is that part of the planning office needs to come from the general fund, because just doing the comp plan and the codes, that benefits everybody in the county, and it's not a applicant-driven process to come up with those codes and just having somebody at the counter and just deal with the state-mandated changes in statute. That's a community responsibility, and the board hasn't heard that from my experience, and we need to say that the next time we have a budget session, is they need to have a general fund basis to get this done.
Any other committee members have any other matters? I have two real quick ones. One is, there's an article that came out in the Oregon Business Report. It's called How Land Use Drives Jobs Away, and it's done by a real estate guy up in the Wilsonville area that tried to put in $1 million business and got tied up, and he's still tied up. And he finally got bit by the system, and it's a good article. And it's under OregonBusinessReport.com if you want to go to that.
Is that coming up to pay
for
the amendment, or is
it there? No, I just popped it up and somehow wound up with it. The only other one is, that came to my attention, is that the Land Conservation Development Commission is holding a hearing on June 22nd. It's going to be in Salem. And one of the topics is, and this is a good example of rulemaking, it's initiation of rulemaking for department facilitation of soils assessment on farmland. Department staff will request the appointment of a rules advisory committee to develop rules for the department's facilitation of soil assessments on farmland. This rulemaking is a result of House Bill 3647, which was passed in the 2010 legislature. And that is going to be it's 3647. You can pull the bill up. I thought I had it with me.
I've got a copy of it right here.
He's got a copy, but...
Is it 36? House Bill 3647 from the 2010 legislature.
But this, and why I bring this up, is because it is open for the public to provide testimony in this. And this particular comment is going to be on the afternoon of, it's Wednesday, June 22nd, and it'll be in the afternoon. And our afternoon session starts at, I think, 1 o'clock.
Where?
Okay, here in Salem.
When you can send in comments.
Yeah. When p.m. But again, I just want to keep emphasizing that this is where the rubber hits the road, is in the rulemaking. All the intent in the world from the legislature can be in the bill and be good.
How was the bill?
Huh?
How was the bill? Did it make sense?
No.
No.
I mean, it's another cost to you as a landowner. You're going to have to buy somebody's expertise to assess your soil, and then they're going to be in charge of the direction of it. It's not a good thing, but I would suggest that.
It's the soils. If I wanted to hire Dennis Hutchison to look at farm soils, what I have to do is go get the approval of DLCD
to hire him, and then he has to do the report and send it to DLCD to evaluate before I can even submit it into the county to look at a land use action. So it inserts staff into reviewing land use soils reports before we even started the process.
Well, saving or
we're
going to adjourn. We'll try to make it earlier next week. Our next meeting is on what day? Does anybody know? The second Monday of July.
Somewhere out of something.
And can you email us when the next meeting is?
Yeah.
Anyway, thanks very much.